The Waddle and Sylvie podcast is brought to you by Marquee Sports Network.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
I thought the day after was my day for angst. You forced me to have angst 2 days after.
Don't
I was looking forward to the next week, the Saints game. How are we going to get better?
This
and you pulled me back down into that rabbit hole.
It's their rabbit hole. It's not my rabbit hole. It's what we've been cursed with our whole life. Our high points were you. Think about that.
Oh, Jesus, I got to go.
No way.
Don't you dare put that on me. Don't you dare put that on me the way that
you.
Meller does.
That's on the Bears. That's not on you. You were great.
Great is a strong word. No. I was miscast. But that's a story for another time.
As far as being the number one receiver
that
1 year?
Yeah, I was more equipped to be, you know, a guy that was playing 60% of the snaps, not 99% of the snaps.
If you would have played for Bill Belichick in the 2000s, you would have been... I know you're not as fast as some of those guys.
No, I'm not as athletic as all those guys.
But you would have been even better. Like, if you had better quarterbacks. I mean, you think you would have been as concussed as you were if Jim Harbaugh wasn't throwing you the football?
Well, he was being concussed as well because he was getting hit when he was throwing it. This is not, you know what, let's move on from that. Drag me down into your rabbit hole, mister.
It's not my, it's the Bears' offensive rabbit hole. That's what
I'm
trying to
tell you.
You
were planning a Super Bowl parade at this time last year, sir.
Not this time, like in September. I'm guilty as charged.
Yeah.
I saw September of 19.
You picked him to win the Super Bowl, didn't you?
Yeah.
You and Greeny? Didn't you and Greeny both pick them to go to the Super Bowl?
Guilty. With that defense, and look, Mitch made that throw to Allen Robinson, the Eagles game. We fixed the kicker position after kicker circus. They were going to win it all. They were ready. That was their 2015. And I was, 2019 was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
It was going to be like the 2016 Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And he was ready to, Mitch was ready.
Just convinced they were going to take the next step offensively, weren't you? Just, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Year two of advisor life, it's going to be all blue skies and sunshine.
Yeah, they got more of their guys, and the quarterback now has been in the system for a year.
Now, I'm not going to lie. I didn't think it would. I didn't think it would go as far south as it did. You know, they averaged 17 and a half points per game last year. 17 and a half points
like
per game.
Like you said, that's been their number for the last 30 games.
Last 30 games, this offense has been responsible for 17.67 points per game.
All right, so we're talking some Bears. There's lots of other things that we're following, including the Tony La Russa possibility, the Sox job opening now that they could officially contact A.J. Hinch and some others. And Dan Weider is going to join us here in a moment. Belancourt in the South Loop, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Belancourt.
Hey, how you guys doing, Matt?
Good.
We're good.
Hey, Sylvia, I hate to put you on the spot, man, but who do you prefer as your coach in GM?
And as I tweeted out to someone else who asked me, therein lies the rub, because now if you were to replace guys, if things go really bad, you're back to square one with Ted Phillips running the show with his consultants. And they're the same ones who hired Ryan Pace over Chris Ballard. And they're the same ones who hired Mark Trestman over Bruce Arians. And that's
it's not comforting.
It's not comforting. No,
it's comforting.
And it's not good, Belancourt.
Isn't it crazy?
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah.
Hey, there's 5 African American quarterbacks coming out in the draft next year in the top 10. If Pace is here, do you trust him to draft any one of these guys?
I don't like. That's a really, really complex issue. I don't know if he's just. If he looked at Mitch and he said, he looks like me, he smells like me, he sounds like me, so I'm going to love him and I'm going to draft him.
To me, it's not a complex question. I think he whiffed not because of the color of the skin of the quarterback, because he doesn't have a good feel for what a good quarterback will be in the National Football League. I'm not telling anybody that they should feel the same way I do. I'm not telling you you should feel differently from me. I'm just telling you how I feel. I think it's a whiff that's based on the inability to identify the quality traits and how they translate to the NFL game. It doesn't have anything to do, in my opinion, based on the skin color of the player.
His model was Drew Brees, and he just wanted to see Drew Brees too. You know, this is our Brees. And that's and whether that's a blind spot for something else because he was looking for Brees, I don't know. But that's what he thought with Mitch. But Drew Brees was so accomplished at Purdue.
Yeah, I'm just not taking – like, listen, I'm all for being critical of Ryan Pace, and we have been, and I think fairly. I don't think we've been unfair. But I limit my criticism for his inability to evaluate their players, but I don't believe he has an agenda attached to the color of the skin of the quarterback. I just don't.
Mike in Lake Zurich, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Mikey.
Hey. Why couldn't they play both quarterbacks?
I think
one guy's not doing good, the other guy's not good, whatever. Scheme up some plans.
Well, I will say this. Like, Nick Foles' inability to escape the rush that is coming after him because the offensive line can't stop anybody. There's no doubt in my mind that Mitch would be more elusive and could keep plays alive longer. I don't believe that Matt Nagy has any intention of all, at all, barring an injury, of going back to Mitch. I thought you saw them. I truly believe that he was just waiting for the opportunity to make that change. And when he did, it was going to signify some sort of rebirth of this offense and the playbook, and now he was going to be able to open things up and run things the way that he always wanted to run them. And I think that if you go back to Mitch in any other avenue other than injury, I don't see that happening.
Let's go to Dan Weider with the Chicago Tribune. He joins us almost on a weekly basis. You hear him all the time on this radio station. He does great work. He's been realistic with these offensive problems. Dan, do you truly believe that Matt Nagy is open to relinquishing play call duties here down the road? But, you know, he made the excuse that he doesn't think he's the issue, but he still remains open to it. Do you truly believe that?
I like the way you're starting with the fastball. I appreciate that. I don't know. I don't know is my answer to that because, I think Matt was candid and forthright with the things he said yesterday about being open-minded, that if these struggles persist, you're going to have to find a way to do something to get this offense unlocked. But also knowing what I know about Matt over three seasons is how much he is a bit of a control freak and likes to do things exactly the way he likes to do things. And it's very difficult for those personality types to suddenly say, here, take the steering wheel and you drive this thing. And I just don't know personality wise, whether it would be easy for him to make that concession and make that move. And so I don't think that is coming anytime soon, as much as we talk about it and as much as he acknowledges it, that it must be a topic of conversation. I just don't know that if push comes to shove, he's going to be willing to do that.
We'd had some very angst-ridden conversations recently, including the last day and a half. And I feel like I have to, at times, just let people know out there that we understand they're 5-2, but we've been talking about these issues for quite some time, and they have been real issues. So, Dan, they are 5-2. The offense has been atrocious. When you put it all into your football calculator and you try to come to some sort of terms and with what you feel about this team in a big picture perspective, where are you at with them?
Worried. Extremely worried. I was really excited for Monday night's game because I thought it was the exact kind of test that this team and this offense needed to take. And I said that in multiple forums just because I thought that defense, the way the Rams play, the way that they come with different pressures, the way that they can have a premier pass rusher like Aaron Donald matched up with a premier corner that can take your best receiver out of the game in Jalen Ramsey, was going to force you to be at your best to stay in that football game. The Bears couldn't pass that test. And so now you look at this with all the struggles that we've talked about since November of 2018 that continue to persist, and you say, what's going to change that? And if nothing's going to change that, then you're staring down this possibility that 5-1 quickly becomes 5-3 this weekend, perhaps quickly could become 5-4. You could quickly see this cushion that you built for yourself go away. And now if this season ends in a situation where you don't make the playoffs, that's a major worry. I think the bigger worry, though, guys, and I think this is where a lot of Chicago is feeling this sort of emotional conflict lately, is that the worst thing that could happen for this organization is to go 10-6 and 11-5 with no direction offensively, no direction at quarterback, no direction that gets you any closer to the ultimate goal of winning a Super Bowl, but yet allows everyone to keep their jobs for another year. And so you're sort of stuck in Chicago of trying to figure out what exactly are you rooting for and what exactly is the ultimate goal. And I think a lot of people are struggling with that, and that's why the emotions are where they are this week.
The big debate that Waddle and I have been having here in the last 24 hours is, if they start 5-1 and finish 9-7, you know, in the last 10 games, and like a Lovey type finish where they were 7-1 and then they finished 10-6.
Are they going to the postseason?
What's that?
No, I'm saying part of the theory. I mean, in 9-7, are they still getting to the postseason?
No, not with all the good teams in the NFC. Okay. So our big debate, Dan, has been, will there be major changes, whether it be with the general manager or the coach?
Well, and I know Tommy's talked about this, that you have this different factor here in the COVID era where the organization is losing money this year, right? There's a lot of revenue stream that has gone away because there's not a butt in a seat at any of the home games and all the other things that come with this. And so now you have to make financial decisions that may be different than you would have had last year. Now, if you're just looking at this from a football perspective, I really tried hard to push George McCaskey at the end of last season to tell us what he was looking for in 2020 to believe that this thing was pointed in the right direction, pushed and pushed and pushed on this. And one of the things that he said was he wanted to see whether 2018 was the anomaly or whether 2019 was the anomaly. He thinks that the 2018 Bears that won 12 games and were thought by everyone on the first weekend of January to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender is the real Bears. We all lived through 2019 and realized 8-8 gives you a lot of reasons to question this. And so the other thing that George said coming out of last season was he was very, very interested to see whether the collaborative troubleshooting efforts between Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace in determining what was causing all these failures and these struggles could lead them in a direction that gets them closer to being that 12-4 team. Well, in your scenario, if it's 9-7 and you've just spent 2 years trying to fix your offense and you've done nothing but stay in place, spinning your tires in the mud, I don't know how you could stick with that situation, needing to start over at quarterback, most likely, needing to figure out what scheme you want to run, needing to find more personnel at every single position to make this team a championship contender. These are really, really difficult discussions that are going to have to be had. The good news is we still get another 9 regular season games to see where this team can take it.
What have you seen? Let's talk about, you know, what if. What leads you to believe that there is a chance that the offense could show some life and some significant improvement? I don't see it. I'm not betting on it. In fact, I'm picking the Saints just for the record this weekend. I'll believe it when I see it. But how do you feel about it, Dan?
All right. So do you want the optimistic view or do you want the realistic view? Because I can give you both, and I'm happy to do that.
I want what's in your heart, mister. I want to know what's in your heart. What's in your football heart?
You know I don't do things with my heart. I do things with my practicality and my reason and my eyes. And my eyes tell me that this offense isn't getting any better no matter what they try. And my eyes are telling me that the advantages of turning to Nick Foles that I thought would be there in as far as not making sort of drive-killing mistakes have not happened the way I thought it would happen. I thought Nick would be a guy that wouldn't make these interceptions where you sort of roll over in your chair and you go, what in the world was that? Where was that throw? What was he doing? The one in Carolina I've mentioned was one of the worst picks that I've seen covering this team. And I've seen a lot of
bad picks.
He got
away with another one of them in that game too.
And this one Monday night, you know, not as bad as the one in Carolina, but still when you're down there in the red zone and you've got a chance to live to see another down, you either got to put that ball to the outside shoulder of Mooney or you got to put it in the fourth row of the seats. And when you kill a drive with a decision-making mistake like that, as a veteran who is basically in the huddle because your experience and your vision and your ability to make good decisions are your strengths, that just can't happen. And so that's what worries me, is there's just not a lot of answers schematically. We know that the conversations we've had about Matt in terms of his occasional infatuation with plays over playmakers And now you've got a quarterback that has very little time to operate back there, doesn't have the athleticism and mobility to give you those ad-lib plays that Mitch might have gotten you when things break down. And so now you're in really bad shape. And, oh, by the way, your starting center may miss this week's game against the Saints. Your best receiver is in concussion protocol. And I don't know. There's little I can look at right now on October 28th and tell you, yes, there's obvious signs that this thing's going to turn a corner, because everything tells you that it's not.
All right, if you have a question for Dan Wiederer from the Tribune, who covers the Chicago Bears, 332-3776. When we come back, Dan, I want to ask you the question. Does everyone owe Mitch Trubisky an apology? Maybe not a full apology, but sort of a half apology. That's coming up next.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
All right, the coach is stubborn, and he wants to be cute with the Denny's menu. He won't give up the play call, and the offensive line is in shambles, and that thing has been totally neglected. You have one really, as Wild put it, blue-chip player in Allen Robinson. Do we owe, as Dan Wiederer continues to join us, I'll throw it to both of you guys.
No.
Does anybody owe Mitch Trubisky an apology?
For what? I'll go first. I'm sorry, Dan, to jump in front of you, but I wanted
to piss this first.
I mean, are you kidding me? Like, for what? Like, I've spent all last year, despite people closing their ears every time I said it, saying that the offensive problems were not all on Mitch. I said a million times. I probably said it before anybody else said it. That the coach didn't do a good enough job putting the quarterback in position to take advantage of what he does well, however limited that may be. I thought the coach actually hung the kid out to dry a touch in terms of not doing more for him. That he did more for Mitch in the first 2.5 games of this season than he did all of last year. So I never blamed it all on Mitch. But I don't feel it necessary, because I never took a cheap shot at Mitch. I just don't think, from the day I watched film of him, he doesn't look like a guy who grew up playing quarterback. And he doesn't process things well to me. When the game gets fast for him, his mechanics break down. That's why he's inaccurate at times. He doesn't see the field as good as he should. He's got a strong arm. He's athletic. He can get on the edge and make some plays. But you're not going to get to the top of the mountain with him. That's what I've always said. And I don't feel it's necessary that I apologize for Jack Diddley Poo on that front.
All right, Dan, what about you?
I've been riding shotgun with Waddle this whole time. And so if you were watching this on twitch.tv in my home office here, I'd be giving a high five through whatever virtual ways we can give high fives these days. Because it's well said. I mean, what are we doing? What are we doing? When the questions start coming up this week on whether the Bears should turn back to Trubisky, I want to put my head through the drywall in my office wall, because we've had four games. Nick Foles, and the struggles are there, but we had 3+ seasons of watching Mitch play quarterback, enough to know who he is as a quarterback. And the things that Tommy just mentioned, the processing, the accuracy. You guys want to go back and rewatch last year's Saints game? Just see, it's Saints week again. You can go back and rewatch that. You can watch the Chargers loss. You can watch the 9 yards in the first half against the Eagles, and then tell me who I'm apologizing to.
Yeah, and listen, Mitch will be in the league for a long time, significantly longer than I was. And he'll make
a lot more money than us, too.
Yes, no doubt. And he'll play some games. I'm not telling you if you ask me, though, if he's the guy you want under center for 16 games and think that he can help elevate your team. Most quarterbacks are dependent. You're figuring that out with Foles as well. There are very few guys that aren't dependent. A lot of them. Jared Goff is dependent, ladies and gentlemen. Jimmy Garoppolo's dependent. There are more quarterbacks, significantly more quarterbacks that are dependent than are can do it on their own. And Mitch is one of them. He'll be in the league a long time, but like, I saw enough for me personally to come to the conclusion that he's just not the answer to the question.
You owe me Mitch apology if you thought that he was 100% of the problem. And I think that we have been on this show and in these discussions very clear that that was not what we were ever saying.
Exactly.
Right, absolutely. I don't feel like I've just gotten the tweets about, hey, Mitch is going to be Tannehill 2.0. Like, I don't see that. Like, Tannehill had some really high moments still, even in Miami. He couldn't stay healthy. Mitch's problem has been dissecting what the defense is going to do before, his accuracy, getting through his reads and not just zeroing in on the see it throw it guy. So I'm with you guys. I'm throwing that out there.
I was told by some in the Chicago media as recently as this offseason that he was going to be Drew Brees 2.0. So now we're down to Ryan Tannehill 2.0. Where will we be next?
I will say this. He's a kid that you can cheer for, okay?
Yeah. No question.
But beyond that, I don't feel okay. Obligated to apologize for how I feel about him as a quarterback.
Let me give you a small Mitch related nugget just to move this discussion forward.
By the way,
forward.
Let me say this, too. I'm sorry to interrupt, Dan. I don't think you've seen the last of him this year because there's no damn way Nick Foles is going to stay healthy for every game behind this offensive line. So Mitch is coming back at some point.
There was a moment Monday night where Nick took a pretty big shot and was down a little extra long, and you're thinking, here we are again, and this might be where it turns. Guys, this is a anniversary today. I don't know if you guys know what this is. It is the 2-year anniversary of Mitch's 70-yard touchdown pass to Tariq Cohen on a screen, which, by the way, is the last time the Chicago Bears offense has scored a touchdown from their side of midfield.
Which is crazy. Think about that again. Midway through the 2018 season is the last time this offense had a touchdown that originated from their own side of the field.
Let me give you the more numbers on that. 33 games, 363 possessions, 2,076 plays run since that happened.
You apologized to me for that.
Yeah, right. They should be lining up to apologize to us. Let me ask you this. Next Tuesday is the trade deadline. We keep getting calls. Is there a plug-and-play guy out there, whether it be another wide receiver, whether it be an offensive lineman that they could help with the interior? Is there somebody out there that won't cost you a fortune that they could plug and play and be better than what they've got?
I mean, I don't know. The NFL trade line conversations have gotten a little sexier in the last 2 or 3 years, and there's been some bigger names that have moved here and there. It's just not what people in the outside atmosphere want it to be, where it's a sudden movement, big deal, big transaction. You got the guy, all of a sudden you elevate two levels. I just don't think that it's there. The Bears are rarely very active at this time in the trade deadline, and I don't think they're wrong for not being active. I just don't think there's a lot out there, and so I wouldn't expect that to be the magic sauce to get this season turned around.
I'm just befuddled now that I was asked if I wanted to apologize to Mitch. I'm sorry. I'll collect myself and get it back on track. I'm trying to get myself to collect yourself. You're right. I know.
You're fired up now, Waddle.
Well, forget it. I mean, I can't stand the whole, it's all this or it's all that. It's not. Right. It's like the whole the quarterback conversation to me is the most nuanced conversation in all of sports. It's like the people that can't wait for Jimmy Garoppolo to throw an interception to say, see, told you, he's no good. Like, I'm not singling out one person. I know there's one person at the station that feels that way, but he's not the only guy. There are thousands of people. And my only point is Jimmy Garoppolo was the only guy in the National Football League last year to be in the top 5 in touchdown passes, completion percentage, and yards per attempt. I'm not telling you he's elite. I'm just telling you he helped a team score 30 points per game last year and get to the Super Bowl. It's a dependent position, and we spend too much time being so definitive, like so loudly definitive about the position and players. Like, I was probably too patient with my evaluation of Mitch, but I spent a lot of time watching him till I finally said, nah, this ain't going to get a whole lot better. So the whole quarterback conversation to me is it's a really nuanced conversation on a lot of different pieces, and I don't think it's given that nuance a lot of times.
Any other nuggets, Dan, that we need to know for the Saints game?
Well, here's what I want to say, Shelby. I think this is an important topic that has to become part of the center stage discussion in the next 3-4 weeks. This idea, and I know you've talked about it a little bit, about whether they have enough firepower on offense, whether they have enough playmakers, and if they don't have enough playmakers, whose fault it is. And I know that you've said in recent days and recent weeks that you're sort of turned your sights on Ryan Pace for his inability to stock this offense with the type of talent and difference-making, you know, personnel that they need. My question to you and the discussion I think we need to have is, what culpability do you put on Matt as part of that evaluation process, as part of that, here's what we need for this position, here's what we need to do to get this shored up? Because I have a real difficult time separating Matt and Ryan to a high degree when you're talking about this part of the conversation.
Is that because of development, or is that because of Nagy has helped him draft his type of players in the last couple of years, i.e. Anthony Miller?
It's both. We've had this discussion for 3 years about how united they are, how in lockstep they are with decisions. Matt was here in March when they paid Jimmy Graham $9 million to become their tight end. He was here when they used their top draft pick on Cole Kmet. He was here when they traded up for Miller, when they traded up for Montgomery. You know, he was here for a lot of these. He was here when they signed Allen Robinson off the top shelf in free agency, which has worked out. And so I have a hard time suddenly saying, oh, well, that's all Ryan's fault. And to your point, Matt was involved in the decisions to, yes, to, you know, you rubber stamp these players. And he's also in charge of developing the players that you do acquire. And we've had this discussion in the past. Who are you seeing that is markedly more improved than they were when they joined the Bears? And that list is very, very short. And those who say Darnell Mooney, I mean, he's been here for 7 games. You know, Anthony Miller had a promising 10-game start to his rookie season, and now is an afterthought for them. So, I think that conversation needs to stay in the front burner before we get into who we need to apologize for and who else we need to, you know, fire at.
And at the end of this, I thought very spirited and very direct conversation. I remind all three of us that they're 5-2.
Correct. And remember, Tommy, I told you guys a couple weeks ago, November 2nd, that was the date that I told you guys to circle on your calendar that we'd have enough information on this team as a whole to know where it was going. So Guess what that is? That's just around the corner, boys.
Next week.
That's Monday.
Yeah. All right. Dan,
awesome.
Great stuff.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Dan.
It.
Hey, let me know the next time you guys are having a band audio week. I'd like to be a part of it next time.
It could happen sooner than later.
Tomorrow.
You never know.
How's tomorrow sound?
Keep me on speed dial, boys. I'm ready.
We do. Thank you. There's Dan Weider, who's great at what he does. Chicago Tribune covering the Bears. We've got Waddle's World coming up next. Then I want to get into the Snell debate at 4 o'clock.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home. Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Amazing.
What's going on in the world of sports?
Look at all the sports picks. We get robots in here. So many activities.
Let's find out together.
Step class. Making my head spin. How many activities we can do.
As we enter.
This is how we do it.
Waddle's World.
Oh, boy. You see this?
What's that?
Khalil Mack didn't practice because of an ankle injury.
I mentioned this to Chris Bleck during the game on Monday. I texted him and
said, it looked like it was limping.
It was right after that play that the refs wouldn't blow dead when they were pushing everybody and Akeem got the flag and he got, and then after that.
They were giving him a breather more frequently on Monday night than they did the week before.
He grabbed at his ankle. Yeah. He was slow to get up.
Yeah.
And then he looked like he was favoring one side over the other the rest of the game.
So we should open up a medical practice, the four of us. We're doctors.
Sure. Khalil Mack did not practice. Ankle now. He had the back injury last week. Cody Whitehair had the calf injury. He did not practice. And then we told you about Allen Robinson and the concussion protocol, so he did not practice.
Did you mention Cole Kmet? Limited with a back?
He was limited, so at least he did some stuff. And then Ted, this is my favorite, is the Ted Ginn. Maybe he had a Veterans Day on Monday Night Football because he did not practice because he got another resting Veterans Day. Like, they're about to cut him, aren't they? Like, why are they still resting him? Wait, for resting? All he got was rest on Monday. The entire game, he said, I don't want to touch the football.
Sylvie's angst and his injury report is brought to you by Rush University Medical Center. Rush offers more than 30 healthcare locations, making it easy to choose excellence. Learn more at ChooseRush.org. And by the way,
Ted Ginn's taking up a roster spot on game day a few weeks ago. We're activating Tyler Bray. This is asinine.
I'd like to see Anthony Miller return punts.
Why not?
Yeah.
Maybe he can do something and be more useful.
There you go.
He can't catch a pass. You think he can catch a punt?
Can he show up at practice on time?
You know what? Listen, you were a second-round pick. We moved up to draft you. Let's see you contribute.
Like, I don't need – I was.
By the way, Waddle's World is brought to you by our great friends at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. To find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank, visit Wintrust.com/findus, member FDIC.
I was having this debate with Abdallah off the air yesterday. Why do they need to sign this 33-year-old punt returner to the practice squad who they want to activate? Like, for what? You're going to take another roster spot for a guy who does one damn thing? Like, develop a young, like Dan was saying, maybe one of your younger guys can be more useful to yourself, and let's see if they can add some value.
Wouldn't you like to see Anthony Miller back there?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm playing.
Like, I will.
Why are you bringing in a journeyman 33-year-old to return exclusively punts? For what?
I don't know.
Makes no sense.
I don't know what to tell you anymore, man. I don't know what to tell you, man.
I mean, it's pretty clear they don't know what they're doing with wide receivers.
Right.
With wide receivers. Outside of Allen Robinson, every single wide receiver they've drafted
or signed
has been
good so far.
So far,
right?
So far, where's
Ridley? No, you're right, and I'm saying like, we're excited about Mooney, and we should be. I like what I've seen. Remember, Anthony Miller had 7 touchdown catches as a rookie.
Sure.
No, I'm with you. Like,
Wims hasn't turned into a reliable receiver.
We got the wrong Ridley. I get it. You know,
but
I
mean, he can't even be active.
Still a fourth round pick.
I'm with you. Totally with you. That's a mystery. I don't know. And like, I'm not close enough to know anything about why he's not dressing. But like, Wims was drafted in what, the 7th round the year before.
Yeah, that Riley Ridley's inactive while we're going to activate a 33-year-old journeyman punt guy. You know, we're signing Ted
Punt
Ginn.
Return guy. We're not giving him the chance to kick the ball. We want him to catch it and return it.
Yeah, Sylvie, that's the point, is Riley Ridley should be a contributing wide receiver with Wims, with Miller, with Mooney, alongside Allen Robinson. Boom, there you go. That's a core of
young
wide receivers, right?
And then
that's what normal teams do, is they have that. That's what the Rams have. That's what other good teams have.
I will say, as we're going through a line item list of the things that they did that either pissed you off or you think, you know, put them where they are, to think that, and this isn't a shot at Juan Castillo, but this is a shot at the concept that you think the addition of a new coach with a new voice in the room is going to be the only solution to upgrade an offensive line that I think everyone would look at in 2019 and did not play well. Like, I thought the offensive line played well in 2018. I thought Charles Leno had a good year. I thought Bobby Massey had a good year. I thought Kyle, when he was healthy, had a good year. I thought Cody Whitehair had a good year. I think you saw it in the rushing totals. 2019 was a poopy season up front, and you thought you were going to solve that problem by signing Jermaine Ifedi, Jason Spriggs away from the Green Bay Packers and bring in Juan Castillo, and that was magically going to fix your running game. And like, look, I that's too much to put on Juan's plate. Like, he's not going to be able to solve that. I mean, like, that's a tough spot to put him in and say, hey, it's all on you, Juan. You're the one that's got to be the reason why our offensive line's going to be better.
What does Harry Easton think when he watches the Bears?
Well, by the way, what Carmen said yesterday, I thought was unbelievable, and I didn't know this, but Carmen let us know that. Do you realize 60% of the first team All Pro offensive linemen from the 2019 recognized team were coached by Harry Easton at Notre Dame? Three out of the five guys. No offensive line coach,
but yeah, that last year was on him.
The NBA revenue was down 10% to $8.3 billion during the pandemic-plagued season. Losses included $800 million in gate receipts, $400 million in sponsorships and merchandise, $200 million in deemed net negative impact in the league's partnership with China after Daryl Morey's Hong Kong tweet. The Orlando bubble recouped $1.5 billion in revenue that would have been lost without restarting the season.
Yeah, think about it. Like 10%, I know that's a lot of money when you rattle that off, but 10% sounds like, oh, they did pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, 10% is $800 million.
No, I know that that's a big figure, but and maybe it's because they played most of their regular season. But can all things considered that you shut things down, you had no fans in the stands.
No, I think they did a nice job recouping as much as they did.
Yeah,
the bubble recouped $1.5 billion in revenue that would have otherwise been lost had things not started back up. The bubble expenses were $190 million, $10 million more than they originally estimated. I thought they did a fantastic job doing this. The league has told teams, though, that if games are played without fans in this coming season, there is a projected 40% loss in overall revenue, or approximately $4 billion.
Yeah, it's those regular season games when they fill those arenas. Did you see two guys that they're the stars? You know, like LeBron, it's talked about if they start before Christmas that he may miss a month of the season. They are pushing, many of the league players are pushing for Martin Luther King Day, even though the Board of Governors want to come back before Christmas. Something to keep your eye on.
Yeah. Quickly, also, the Wisconsin game at Nebraska has been canceled after a number of COVID-19 cases have emerged for Wisconsin. The NFL is planning 20% seating capacity for the Super Bowl down in Tampa. Texans have closed their facility after a player has tested positive.
They're on bye, though, so that's the one bit of good news there.
Good call. And the Boston Marathon has been postponed until at least the fall of 2021. So... when we come back, I'll lighten the mood with some crazy stories.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
You know what time it is? Time for the nuttiest story of the day, and it's brought to you by Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. A night with Screwball.
And it's bound to get a little nutty.
You are right about that, sir. I heard this story today with Carmen and Yurko, and Carmen and Yurko actually had this person on their show. Chris asked me if it was legit. I'm assuming it was legit, right? It was legit. A negated Chicago Bears sack leads to daily fantasy player losing out on $1 million prize.
Oh, yeah, they had him on the air.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
A stat correction that changed a sack to a tackle for a loss in the Bears-Rams game Monday caused a $997,000 fantasy football heartbreak for a 41-year-old insurance agent in St. Louis. For 30 minutes after Monday's game ended, Rob Hunts said, Hunts thought he had won the $1 million first prize in a DraftKings contest. Everything had worked out perfectly down the stretch of the Rams 24-10 win. One of his lineups that featured both the Bears and Rams' defense had scored 92.79 points, the most out of the 176,470 entries. His computer screen showed that a $1 million first prize was his. He texted with friends. He called his parents to share the exciting news and then took his dog named Achilles for a quick walk. When he returned, he wanted to refresh his computer screen again just to see myself on top, he said. And then, boom, a sack that had been credited to the Bears defense late in the fourth quarter was changed to a running play, a 3-yard loss for quarterback Jared Goff. That 3-yard loss dropped Hunts into a tie for sixth place with 18 other entries, and his prize money dropped from $1 million to just under $3,100. Now, Yurko actually went and looked at the film to verify that it was the right decision. And Yurko aptly described that there were no receivers going out for running pass routes. They were actually blocking from the start. So there was not even a hint of this being a pass play at all. So the ruling was correct. Unfortunately, Mr. Hunts did not win the grand prize.
Just a difference of $997,000.
Can you imagine what he went through? Like, it says $1 million. He takes Achilles for a nice walk around the block. Here's probably comes back, pops a cold one, celebrates, sits down at his computer. What the? And then he finds out.
He was good. He was a good sport. It's on the Carmen and Yurko on our ESPN podcast. Chicago app. It's on the podcast for Carmen and Yurko. And he was really good, and he said that he had not emotionally spent anything yet, that he had only talked to his parents and said that, yes, I was going to give them money, but it wasn't like he had started spending things in his
mind. I'd have probably broken something, though. When you probably have broken something, thrown something across the room in
disgust. That's the stuff of nightmares for years. Like, you go to bed and you have nightmares about that, and you don't trust anything that you get.
How about this? A rare blue moon will spookily rise on Halloween. And this is what it means.
Blue moon is when you get two moons in a month. Two full moons in a month, right?
How'd you know that?
Well, because I...
Because what?
Because of the
phrase.
You're
dope. You're a sports dope. How did you know that?
Once in a blue moon.
I'm a sports dope. I mean, like, I wouldn't have known that. Do you have, like, a side business going on with astrology or something?
I've always liked weather and stuff like that, so... Like, that's...
Do you stand at home in front of a green screen in odd times and pretend like you're given a weather forecast?
Yes, I would love to.
Would you put that on Twitter so I can see that?
We've done that in the ABC 7 studio, but I could do that here.
Please do. Can you do us a favor tonight? Do a kind of a pseudo weather forecast and
post
it. So
you want me tonight, just in the... Like, there's no sports really going on.
Put on a suit. You got to do it full way. You can't just be in... You got to put on a suit like you're standing in front of the green screen at ABC 7. Let's just say that Cheryl Scott or Tracy Butler is not available. So we called Sylvia in.
The high-pressure system's coming in out of the west.
Don't spoil it for us. Okay. I need to see it tonight.
Okay.
But don't, like I said, don't be in some sort of Cubs jersey and some shorts. You've got to dress for the situation.
Let's see what's going on in our neighborhood right now. Up in Huntley, it's 32 degrees. Look, down in Naperville, it's a little bit warmer at 41. And, of course, by the lake, it's warm right now at about 45. But we're going to get down into the 30s. So if you've got those plants out there, you may want to cover them up.
Okay, see, now, like, you got to spice this thing up. Don't just be bland. You got to do your own special thing. You got to do your own special thing. And don't give us any more. I want to see it on Twitter tonight.
You want me to all of a sudden come up with a weather, what am I looking for? Like a persona?
No, you're just silly, but you got to put your special touch on it. Like, there's got to be like a signature line or a phrase or a motion. Maybe you shuffle into the green screen and then you shuffle out. I don't know.
Here in the Middle
East,
it's
your choice. Anyway, a blue moon, by definition, is a rarity. It will rise this month, notably on Halloween. The lunar event means simply that a second full moon will rise in the same month. The first one, a harvest moon, lit up the sky on October 1st. It also happens to be a blood moon, meaning a full moon that happens in October in the midst of spooky season. It actually won't actually be blue unless there are dust and smoke particles of a certain size, which can scatter red light and make the moon take on a bluish hue. So you're going to have a rare blue moon on Halloween.
A blood moon.
A rare, it says blue moon, but it can be a bloody blue moon if you'd like. I just want to see your weathercast tonight.
Do we have Florida or Ohio today?
Oh, that's right. Today is Wednesday. I blew right through the stop sign.
When we come back?
Yeah, let's kick off the 4 o'clock hour with a little Florida or Ohio.
We'll let everyone play in 2 minutes, and then I want to throw out where everyone stood on Blake Snell getting pulled last night. We're back in 2 minutes.